Hello, and welcome to the Architectette podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Brady. Architectette is a podcast that illuminates the lesser heard stories of women plus in architecture and related fields. On today's episode of Architectette, we meet with Patricia Romalo. Patricia is the Assistant Vice President of International Relations at NCARB. Over the past 8 years, she has held various roles within the organization, so we chat about how her career at NCARB has evolved. If you're not familiar with NCARB, it stands for the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, and it's the nonprofit that organizes the AREs, or the Architecture Registration Examinations, which are basically all of the exams that are essential to becoming a licensed architect. You're going to hear a lot about NCARB on today's episode, but first we're going to start with Patricia's journey to get her architecture license in the U.S. after being licensed in Argentina. She offers insights into the challenges and rewards of navigating licensure requirements and how she applies those experiences to her work at NCARB today. We next talk about how NCARB implements changes like transitioning from ARE version 4.0 to 5.0, modifying exam formats, switching to PSI as a testing center, removing scrap paper, reintroducing rescheduling fees, and eliminating the rolling clock, and how these changes have impacted testing and licensure rates. We also talk about how NCARB addresses DEI issues within the profession and how they track changes with their NCARB by the numbers report. I also had to include a conversation about the cost of exams and the cost of maintenance fees. Patricia and I talk about NCARB as a nonprofit and how they work to minimize costs, what programming they offer above and beyond exam prep, and how you can get involved as a volunteer with NCARB. All links to connect with Patricia and learn about the resources mentioned in this episode will be linked in the show notes. You can show the podcast some love by joining our communities on Instagram, LinkedIn, and you can also leave us a review and rating on Apple and Spotify podcasts. Enjoy the episode. Patricia, I'd like to welcome you to this episode of the Architectette podcast. I'm so happy that you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I was very excited when I received the invitation.
Yes, and I also want to shout out Elias for putting this together. Elias and I met because I actually interviewed at a firm he used to work at back when I was planning my move to San Francisco. And he currently volunteers with, or I think works with, NCARB. And that's kind of how this conversation happened. Do you mind just sharing with our audience your background? And then what was your experience taking the AREs? And then how did you come to work at NCARB?
I have a diverse background in the sense of by design. I'm a restless person and I have done a lot of things, but basically starting from the beginning, this lovely accent comes from Argentina. So I was born and actually went to architecture school in Argentina. I got licensed there and then I moved to the US. And at the time, one of the big changes NCARB has had was that there is now a path for individuals who are licensed abroad to get a license here. But at the time, there wasn't one for me. So I was the one asking a lot of questions. Some of the advice I gave is actually personal, not so much from NCARB. But it's so I was that person who couldn't find the right information, not to mention the language. So big words like reciprocity, those were not taught in school. So I kept trying to figure out what the process is, understanding what I needed to do. But yes, I came to the US. It took me a lot of time to become, it took me like 10 years to become an architect again. So kind of my pride, it hurts. I was an architect and then I moved here and I couldn't say I was an architect. So my ego was hurt. My biggest push was that I found that I couldn't grow anymore. And to me, career advancement is very important. So that license, when people ask me, do we really need to get a license? To me, it's about opportunities. It wasn't about whether I wanted exactly to practice some type, a specific type of architecture in the future. Having a license opened up doors in any direction. Even in the ones I didn't expect, I can assure you I did not grow up saying, when I am grown up, I want to be an NCARB staff person. No, that was not my dream. But I usually, when I present to students, I joke that if you think about architects in movies, they're always this honorable person that it's the nice person. It gives you the respect, the standing to be able to move things forward. And the background we have in decision-making, in project management, the skills that we gain while becoming an architect are so important in any field. Yes, you were asking me specifically about my process to get licensed here. It wasn't easy. I was lucky that I actually worked in smaller firms, so the exams were a little bit challenging because I was working like anyone else. So I actually ended up negotiating with my boss, which was very supportive, but basically, well, we have a deadline. Yes, I can work this weekend. I probably shouldn't say that I worked on weekends, but I worked on weekends, but then I would ask for a couple of days off during the week because I needed to study and that exam was there. So it kind of really took my negotiation skills to move forward. Yes, I took them quite fast because once I realized that if I kept postponing, I would never get licensed, I was able to take them really fast. Taking them really fast means you don't have social life. So that's a choice. I did that by choice, but I took them in a year. And I did practice for a few years afterwards. In total, I have like 15 years in practice. But then one of my previous bosses sent me the description of the NCARP job. He said, well, this looks like something you would be good at. And I was like, no, I'm in architecture. But I ended up sending because it was different. It was certainly different. And actually, it had portions of things that I was afraid of. And I had this need to challenge myself. So it involved public speaking. I used to faint when speaking publicly. So that was a challenge. I was afraid of flying, and my job at the time required flying like almost every 2 weeks. So that was a big thing. It required being very social, and I was very introvert. So it was a big challenge, and I'm actually glad I took it because now I still get to be part of the profession, or at least I feel that way. But my skill sets are better for what I'm doing now. So I like teaching and I get to talk to students all the time. I like changing things and looking at new opportunities. And of course, as part of the innovation team, that's my job now. So I am a very lucky person.
Yes, it sounds like you had quite a journey to get where you are, but it was always kind of leading you to this position where you're so well suited. You have all of the experience. You have that connection of having a license elsewhere, coming to the US, and they're like, oh, we don't accept this, which I can only imagine how frustrating that would be to put in all the work and then to show up and it's like, oh, you're back at square one, even though you have the competency and the experience behind that, but it's just a different system here and you have to play into this system.
Definitely. I mean, actually gives me, I use it as a strength. It gives me that point of view that, well, you know, a transcript. Let's take a transcript. So easy. You email your school or call them, pay a fee for sure, and they will send your transcript wherever you need it. That does not work in other countries, or at least mine. It's not that easy. So it gives me that extra way of thinking of, oh, is NCARP putting together a program that needs a document that, or mutual recognition agreement? Are we going to be asking for this document that is so difficult to get?
That's something that the transcript and getting those records transferred to the US is something another one of our guests, Patricia Akinaga, is from Brazil. And so when she applied to universities in the US, one of the schools actually lost her transcript. And they're like, oh, can you just send it? The deadline's in a couple days. And she's like, no, I can't just send it because I have to translate, like I have to get it, I have to translate it, I have to put it all together with my portfolio. And then I think it was probably snail mail. And she's like, it's just not going to happen. So she ended up just going, well, I hope I get into the other school. And she did. So it worked out. But there's a lot more than just kind of like sending an email, getting a transcript, sending an email. It's very involved, especially amongst many, you know, countries and jurisdictions. Maybe we transition to talking more about your role as Assistant Vice President of Innovation at NCARB. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you do there and what your roles and responsibilities are?
So actually, I did not start as in this position or in this path at NCARB. I started as a manager of experience in education. So I was very tied to AXP and actually part of the outreach team. I would travel at different AIA components and schools, which I loved, and got to share some of my experiences and some information. But I think the most important part of that, I got to hear a lot of what things could be maybe done differently or where are the pain points that we still had And of course, we cannot solve all the problems, but it gave me that perspective that I could bring into the innovation role. Not every organization has an innovation team, and a nonprofit that is slightly different and more difficult to find, but it was part of, it was the vision of the Chief Innovation and Information Officer, Guillermo Ortiz de Zárate, and he wanted to do this for a while. And while COVID was, of course, a very disruptive time, one of the things that allowed him to do was to put out a request out in, at INCARP saying, who would like to look into what an innovation team and what innovation would be at INCARP? And I raised my hand. I was selected. And since then, we have been looking at, yes, how to support an innovative mindset, which is easier said than done. Everyone is afraid of failure. I don't know if everyone, but it is a big word, especially when you have a boss and you cannot tell him or her, I'm just going to fail at this. It's like, no, it's a culture of lessons learned. And that is another aspect that we found it's more challenging when you say it, because lesson learned, talking about a failure or talking about something that you learned means that you're talking about something that did not go as planned. And sometimes in certain cultures, that is not something that people feel free to do. So I realized I jumped in before understanding the theory, but then I had to take a step back and look at the big picture. And I talked to other individuals in innovation and understand how culture becomes so important. My role, my official title is Assistant Vice President of Innovation. And I kind of have a dual role that are very close together. I like doing several things at the same time. That's my personality. But basically, as part of innovation, what we do is we try to encourage the organization to remain nimble and identify opportunities for improvement or for new things that we should be trying out or testing. We do this through a simple innovation framework that encourages collaboration, especially talking to stakeholders, whoever that is for the particular project, experimentation, testing things, make sure that, I'm sure you've heard before, fail fast. So we make sure that we are learning constantly and making decisions based on information that it's data. As part of the international team, it's another very exciting area. I think it's undeniable that we all know that practice of architecture is global. So it doesn't matter as much where you're sitting. It's more of where you're practicing, where your buildings are located. So understanding that, the charge is that we're trying to identify opportunities, in most cases through mutual recognition agreements, to be able to support this global practice model that we have today.
Mm-hmm. And are those things that NCARB has been working on for a long time, or are they fairly recent developments? I know REBA and AIA kind of just had an agreement. Is that something that NCARB was working on for a long period of time, or it was a fresh idea?
Yes, the agreement is actually between NCARB and the Architects Registration Board, ARB. In this case, that particular one took a few years, because when you're doing a mutual recognition agreement, so many things are involved and geopolitics are part of it. That was, remember, Brexit, we had to wait. So we started the process, we had to wait for Brexit, everything happened, even the Queen unfortunately passing. So everything took longer, the Parliament needed to make decisions. And then the competencies that UK had also were updated. So we had to redo our assessment. So yes, a mutual recognition agreement, it takes a long time, but we're very excited because personally, I believe in the ability to move around and expand our opportunities as professionals.
Mm-hmm. And so is NCARB working on any other agreements with any other countries around the world?
Yes, we're constantly looking for new opportunities. Right now, we're working on updating the agreement we have with Australia and New Zealand. Mm-hmm. We are trying to make the agreements that we have and the new ones more inclusive. That is a big charge that NCARB has in general. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make it that as long as the competency is met, we shouldn't be limiting because of other factors. And that is why we're taking a look at the agreements that we already have to make sure that that is applying to those. But yes, we are also looking into the future, but it takes a long time.
Yeah. And so kind of stepping back from those agreements, I know we dived in on kind of like one specific aspect, to look at NCARB overall, why is NCARB essential to the architecture profession?
So that is a very good question. And so if we look at the mission is to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. And but how do you get there? Kind of coordinating our members, which are the licensing boards around the country. We have 55. And of course, each of them, I don't know if people, the Wayback Machine, if people remember, each of them have the right to set their own requirements. And that meant in the past, like each of them had their own exam, had their own experience program. So I think the biggest success, or at least the most impactful service that NCARB offers, is streamlining the licensure process. So now we have one national exam. There is one way that is accepted by all jurisdictions to document your experience. And of course, we from the licensing board side, we also have model law that we encourage the licensing boards to adopt. So there are not so many different ways to get a license, and there is more mobility, which ultimately is the goal, is to be able to have that one license, and then you don't practice in one location.
Mm-hmm. For someone who might be daunted by the cost, the quantity of the AREs, what would you say to them to encourage them to kind of establish that NCARB report, keep updating, and work towards licensure?
So I think the most important part is to understand it's all revolving around competencies. So yes, the process is important. It goes back to health, safety, and welfare of the public. But what we do at NCARB and all the programs are designed to help you gain the knowledge and skills that you need to become competent, and of course then assess it. So anyone who hires you from the public knows and is sure that you are competent. There is a fee. It does take a lot of process to have that standardization. It takes a lot of work, and we are grateful to our volunteers to develop those questions. My advice is always try to get support from your firms. We do actively work to keep the cost of the exams specifically, and anything that any of the services related to good licensure candidates as low as possible. Mm-hmm. However, of course, there is a fee.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
What does it cover? It covers data. We maintain that data for a long time for your NCARB record. We have above 400 NCARB volunteers working in developing the programs and developing questions. So that involves top costs. Developing new NCARB services, like the international mutual recognition agreements, that, as much as I enjoy it, that involves cost. Mm-hmm. So we do try to minimize the licensure kind of cost, but it has to go somewhere, yes. Mm-hmm.
And is that the main revenue generator for NCARB? Is that where the most money is coming from, both the ARE fees and then also the maintenance fee of keeping your record with NCARB?
Keeping the record and NCARB certificate which is slightly higher cost. It's where most of the money comes from. We're in a nonprofit, so it's not like it goes to a specific person. It's all the money goes back into programs or to support the organization. When I'm talking to people, because I do get this question a lot, it's there are so many things that people don't realize that NCARB offers as a service. So for instance, did you know that NCARB supports education by having a training that is specific for professional practice educators? So once a year, a cohort is selected and the educators apply and they get a specific training. So students get better education related to practice, that it's so important to go into the professional life. So there are a lot of unknowns in addition to the big ones that we all know about.
Yeah, I think oftentimes once you finish the AREs, it's like, okay, I don't need to go to the NCARB website anymore, just maybe to maintain that. But as someone with an active NCARB record, and just speaking on behalf of my listeners, I would like to vote for lower fees, but I understand that it's going to a lot of important things. But just wanted to say, I know you don't set them.
And I have to say, by background, I'm an architect. I practiced architecture for 15 years. I was on the side of having to pay the NCARB I once stood in front of my boss and I asked, do I really need an INCARP certificate? I am grateful that he said yes. And then I learned about the benefits, and it actually opened opportunities. You were asking about like why INCARP. It really opened up opportunities to have a job somewhere else. Like once upon a time, I feel like a lifetime ago, I was hired just because I had the ability to get a license in different places where they had projects. So I'm all about opportunities. I always like to keep my options open. And the NCARP certificate gave me the opportunity to apply in a different state from where I was and immediately get licensed to the point that I got hired. And the first thing I had to do that for my job, like first day, was apply for licenses.
Yeah. And I think that's great to keep in mind. So we talked about kind of the reciprocity between other nations that NCARP is working on and developing and kind of rolling more out. There have also been some other changes that NCARP rolled out recently, like switching from, this is maybe a little bit longer ago, but switching from version 4.0 to 5.0. Testing changes during the pandemic of, you know, we used to have to go into a Prometric center before, but now you could test at home potentially, or I think there's different formats. The scratch paper is no longer a thing anymore. And then also eliminating the rolling clock. So how does NCARB as an organization implement these changes and kind of decide which changes are necessary to implement? And then how are they received by the public?
So, well, that goes back to the need. It's imperative for this organization, for any organization, to remain nimble, to be adaptable. And the word we use is agile. Our core values, we want to remain open, restless. All those keywords are important to us because the profession evolves. But our goal is to make sure that our processes and licensure process and all of our programs remain relevant, fair and effective. So that's why you have been seeing a lot of changes. Most of them, diversity, inclusion, and equity, it is an important subject for everyone, but it's something that we are actively and practically making changes to improve this slow process. So the results are not instantaneous, but we are trying to move in the right direction. Overall, I think it's INCARP is constantly monitoring and evaluating the program. So we have a data department, so data and analytics department team that is constantly trying to gather information, requesting feedback. So I'm sure some of you may have noticed that there are a lot of surveys that INCARP sends out. And taking a minute to answer is actually very important. I know surveys can be annoying, I get a lot, but this is your voice. We're trying to listen.
So are some of these ideas, maybe you see trends over time of survey responses, for example, I'll use the rolling clock, of this is something that people have an issue with or think could be improved or are requesting a different format. And then NCARB receives that feedback. Once it surpasses a certain amount, it's like, okay, this is something we should really consider changing. Is that kind of how that works?
Yes, and so yes, we hear that, so that kind of helps us identify. We have surveys, kind of a few things at the same time. Baseline on belonging, it was one of the, it's a survey report, now you can check out the report, in which this was first identified, and then we look at the data. So based on that information, we look at the data, and yes, there is something here. So based on that, that's the data-informed decision-making, we collect that. We identify, and then our volunteers are the ones who help us develop a solution or at least something that we can try and to improve. And of course, our leadership then is part of the process as well in creating that. I know it's several steps, takes time. One of my favorite examples is because obviously English is a second language for me. So I took the exams in English, but with my brain kind of taking a little bit more time to take the exam. And I'm sure I was not the only one to tell INCARP this. I was the one that was fortunate to be in the inside telling the INCARP that. But we heard that a lot in our outreach efforts as well. When we looked at the data, that came up in based on belonging as well. But when we looked at the data, it was identified that, yes, we had proof that there is something there. And that's how the whole change came into place. And today that's an accommodation that can be requested.
Yeah, that's excellent. And you kind of mentioned some of the data and the reports coming in. There is a big report that NCARB puts out, I think almost every year, called NCARB by the Numbers. I was looking at some of, I of course looked at it as soon as it came out, but then I was refreshing some of the data there. And that really shows, and to very oversimplify it, that I think, and a lot of people know this without even looking at the report, diversity is an issue in architecture. And you mentioned especially people who have English as a second language. I think we see deficits in women in the profession. And we also see very serious deficits in terms of people of diverse ethnic backgrounds, getting not only just starting in architecture schools, but then also getting their licenses. Are there any trends that NCARB is tracking specifically to increase and encourage more diversity and more people of diverse backgrounds passing the architecture registration examinations and becoming licensed architects?
So yes, actually, if you look at the NCARB by the numbers report, it actually gathers all the information from the previous year. So when we talk about the NCARB by the numbers of 2023, we're actually talking about data from 2022. So just to clarify, we do track a lot of data. And what is more important, and that's the benefit of having a great data team, they look at how can they improve the accuracy of that information. And you were talking about racial and ethnic diversity. It continues to increase, especially early career stages. If we talk about Asian and Hispanic or Latino candidates, for instance, over half of the new record holders and nearly half of those who are reporting experience are identified as other race, non-white. So regarding gender parity, which I think is the most evident when you walk into a room, women now are making up 50% of the record holders, of the new record holders at NCARB. So one of the first steps when you're starting your licensure process is to get an NCARB record. So that kind of indicates who's coming in to start the process. Of course, we do have to maintain the support so people can finish the process. However, looking at diversity has slowed at the point of exam completion. 36% of candidates complete the exam. That complete the exams are identified as people of color, and 44% are identified as female. So, for instance, you were asking how does NCARB plan ahead. We look at this data. So we see, oh, okay, so yes, we're moving in the right direction, but we're seeing this small thing that is not really going in that direction. So how can we support that specific item? So it's still new architects are more diverse than ever, which I think is something to celebrate, even if it's a small win. And one out of three new architects in 2022 was a person of color, and two out of five were women. So these are kind of encouraging statistics.
Yeah, so it seems that there's a larger diverse pool of candidates that are entering into the AXP program. And we're seeing those numbers rise more significantly than numbers of diverse candidates that are getting their license. It kind of, what you've been saying is that the entry is, that number is growing at a larger rate than the growth of the candidates actually getting that license.
Yes, that has been identified. That's why you're seeing those updates to the programs, and we want to support the process in itself. They are both going in the same direction, but not at the same speed of change, I would say. Yes, NCARB is big, it has a big part in making these changes, but this is everyone. This is that you have a person who's working towards licensure in your firm. Please note that, encourage them, try to kind of work with the person so they have the time to study or they get the experience they need. So it's in firms, of course, AIA, we partner with AIA, with NOMA to support, but it is not just one organization or one person. This is the job that everyone's job to help support those who are coming into our profession, not only by encouraging them to get started, but also by supporting women who have kids, males who have kids. We all have different challenges. The success of an endeavor like improving diversity in our profession, it's not just one, it's an effort of all. And hopefully just, we all have to ask ourselves, what are we doing to improve that?
And also, this data too doesn't include the rolling clock changes. Is that correct?
No, the rolling clock changes came up last year, so we are seeing some changes. Of course, our data analyst will be better suited to answer exactly what is related to what, but in general, the number of candidates completing the ARE has remained steady, increasing from 2022 just by 1%, increasing in 2022 just by 1%. We do have to take into account that we had, you were talking about changes, so we switched the vendors from Prometric to PSI. Mm-hmm. We launched English as a second language. Something that has made a difference, and I do have some data to back it up, it's full-length practice exams that are really helping. However, there are other things like the rescheduling fee. People started rescheduling all the time, so the number of people taking the test actually, it was lower. It also impacted the average time that the candidate took to complete the process, which, by the way, was 2.9 years, about 3 months longer than 2021. So we are recovering from COVID. So we are still seeing that for COVID, a lot of people had to slow down the process or were not able to take the exam. Testing centers were shut down, so that affected the length, how long it took to finish the exam. Making the rescheduling fee free actually affected the number of times people were rescheduling. So that affected some of the data or some of the experiences that we had in 2021 and 2022. But we are now, of course, we know that, we're aware, and we'll keep tracking data to see how things move on from now on.
And so do you think that the changes that NCARB is implementing are going to have a serious impact on diversity in the profession in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Yes, I am optimistic, very optimistic, because I think the most important part is that NCARB is looking at it and is willing to look at things and change and trying to identify, as you mentioned, the systemic issues that may be there, creating blocks for every minority or actually for everyone in the licensure process and trying to make those modifications and removing barriers that are really not needed. So I'm optimistic about that. I know as any new improvement, any new initiative, there will be things that need to be, that may not work and we'll have to pivot or we'll have to improve, but that is part of the process. It's worse to stay just still and not do anything. And I wanted to mention one more thing related. This is important for anyone who's studying. NCARB has released full-length practice exams, and we have data that actually people who use it, the pass rates have increased between 7 and 18% with those compared to those who don't take the practice exam. So this is a tool that is free, available to anyone who is studying for the exams and working on their exams. It doesn't cost anything, just it's an easy thing to do and it helps you be successful.
And that's a great tip. I think you've mentioned a lot of great resources that if people are familiar with NCARB that they might want to take advantage of. The continuing education, if you have English as a second language, maybe you can ask for those accommodations during your ARE testing process. Are there any other advice or resources that you'd like to share with students or professionals about what NCARB has to offer that people might not know about?
Sure. I mean, we could talk for hours, but I won't.
So episode 2, yeah.
So this has been a change in me. I came from the profession. I kind of didn't know anything about NCARB. I got my certificate, and then I just had it. And when I actually got a job into NCARB, I was the one asking a ton of questions, probably driving everyone around me crazy. But now I believe that we need to talk more about some of the things that NCARB is doing that may be helpful. So for instance, let's start with it. Try not to reschedule. That's kind of my biggest advice, because if you find excuses, we're excellent. As humans, we're excellent finding excuses of why we are not doing something. There is always a wedding. There's always something going on. So it's kind of being accountable, setting up a plan, allowing for flexibility in your plan because life happens. But I would say the most important part is getting the right information. So I talked a lot about data throughout this, but It's making sure the information you have is correct. So make sure you go to the source, make sure we have a website with a lot of information. You can always call InCart, but use those individuals around you to encourage you, to motivate you. Of course, they have their experiences. You can learn a lot from them. But if it's something specific about process, where you can get your license, something that will impact your next 10 steps, strongly recommend make sure you go to the source and make sure you understand the process so you can plan ahead and try to keep your opportunities open. Then don't get discouraged. Keep going until you get the answer to the question you have.
That's great advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. And so if someone wanted to get involved with NCARB, how would they go about doing that, starting to volunteer?
Oh, we would definitely welcome any person who wants to volunteer. We have a call for volunteers once a year. So that is a great opportunity. And if they want to, they can just reach out to us if they need information. But once a year is when the call for volunteers is selected. There are many ways and many committees that NCARB has. Of course, if you're licensed and you like writing exam questions, oh, we have a lot of opportunities for that. But there are some interesting, we have committees that are related to model law. There are committees related to DEI, to exam experience. So they're looking at the licensure process the level of involvement. It's really interesting. I think it helps us view like any volunteer opportunity, it helps you view things from a different point of view, and it makes you a better professional. So I highly encourage it. I wanted to mention one more I'm biased. I'm part of that one. There is a committee that with other colleagues, we are the staff liaisons for the Futures Task Force. So this is part of what the value of NCARB is. This group is tasked with looking at what trends will impact the profession in the next 20, 30, 50 years. And it's a group of volunteers, so it's not NCARB looking at it, it's professionals in our profession talking to experts in various fields, not just architecture, and looking how these new trends or what we see today may impact the profession in a few years, in several years. And this really helps inform the other committees and helps inform our volunteers and everything else. So it is another value. Then we share this with the licensing boards, and it's really kind of thought leadership. We actually, with this group, excellent volunteers that we have, they're putting together a symposium. It's called Future Symposium, first time, so we keep trying things. And to talk about these trends, how they impact the profession and regulation, because that's our job. So how do they impact regulation or kind of the opposite? Is regulation impeding growth? It's impeding certain aspects that may be important to the profession. So we try to kind of flip questions and looking at everything. It's a difficult task because there's so much going on, but I feel like those kind of things are the value that is not seen, but it can really help. And we're excited about this symposium. We'll see. It's the first time. We'll see how it goes.
Excellent. Well, I'll link all of that information in the show notes of how to volunteer, where to sign up, all of the events that NCARB is putting on, the symposium, and also just NCARB's website. If you don't have an ARE log going for your AXP hours, maybe set that up after listening to this episode. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode and sharing this conversation and telling me all about your work and the organization. And just, we really got into a lot of great details, the statistics and the facts and just different resources that people can use to advance themselves in the profession of architecture. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for listening. I can sometimes talk too much, but I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. And thank you for doing what you do, because really awareness is the key for all the efforts we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Architect Ed. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to share it with your network,
leave us a 5-star rating and review, and follow us on social media. Reach out to the podcast directly at architectet.com. That's architect, E-T-T-E.com. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. See you then.